Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. This is WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. We are here every week moving the state forward. Today, I'm delighted to have back Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, Mark.
So to remind folks listening, what is Law Forward?
Law Forward is a nonprofit, nonpartisan impact litigation organization here in Wisconsin that defends and advances democracy in Wisconsin. We are the nation's only democracy-centered law firm that is working in just one state, and certainly the only one here in Wisconsin.
Now, you are general counsel of Law Forward, and you've become, that's a full-time position for you now, right? You gave up very lucrative private practice to jump in full time on democracy in Wisconsin, right?
That's correct. We founded Law Forward 4 or 5 years ago, and we've built a team. We're up to a group of eight. And just a few weeks ago, I left my law firm. I had founded Law Forward. I served as the chair of the board for several years, and I left my law firm and joined the staff full time. It's really exciting. There is so much work to do repairing and advancing democracy in Wisconsin.
So Law Forward was involved in the whole gerrymandering issue and the development of new maps. Just briefly touch on that.
Well, one of the first priorities when we created Law Forward was we knew that the redistricting was coming and that we needed to fight for fair maps in Wisconsin, because the most extreme partisan gerrymander in the United States had strangled democracy in Wisconsin for a decade already, and it had to stop, or it wasn't clear that Wisconsin's democracy would recover. So this was one of the founding priorities for Law Forward. And yes, we were involved in the redistricting litigation in 2021. And then we were sort of the primary movers in bringing the Clark case last year that led to new fair maps that will allow Wisconsin to have fair maps for the Wisconsin Assembly this year for the first time in 14 years. And that across this cycle and the next cycle in 2 years will allow a full Wisconsin State Senate to be elected under fair maps.
Well, thank you much personally. And thank you, Law Forward. And, you know, I know Law Forward relies on folks giving money, right?
Yes, Law Forward is a charitable organization, as I said before, nonprofit, nonpartisan, 501c3. So all donations are tax deductible, and we do. We make this work. We are able to do this work to protect voting rights, to advance democracy in Wisconsin based on the contributions we receive from generous individuals and from foundations.
And if someone listening today wants to say thank you to Law Forward for helping us have fairer maps, I'm not quite convinced they're completely fair, so I'll say much fairer maps. How do they get hold of you?
They can find us at lawforward.org or on Twitter, X at LAWFWD.
So, folks, this is a shout out for Law Forward. Thank you for their hard work, leading work, and getting Wisconsin, moving forward again. So, I mean, you know, that's my theme every week, moving Wisconsin forward. It is our state motto. Law Forward is the lead legal entity. So looking right now where we're at, we have a new Wisconsin Supreme Court decision on drop boxes. My assumption is Law Forward has been watching this for some time too.
We have. We are very pleased with the new decision. We participated in the case. Remember that drop boxes had been used in Wisconsin for decades. They became much more popular, as you know, Mark, during the COVID pandemic. And they really boomed in popularity. And in response to that, some anti-democracy activists brought a lawsuit, first in Waukesha County and then in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, to prohibit the use of drop boxes. That case was called Tigan. And in 2022, the Wisconsin Supreme Court misinterpreted the Wisconsin statutes that for years had allowed drop boxes. And this is not a controversial statement. In fact, in 2020, the lawyer for Robin Voss and then State Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald sent a letter to the city of Madison that described drop boxes as safe, reliable, and expressly authorized by statute. Then, after the 2020 election, everything changed, and some people started really hating drop boxes. And so these anti-democracy activists brought a lawsuit and they convinced a bare majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court that drop boxes violated Wisconsin law. What happened last month is, or earlier this month actually, is that in another case called Priorities USA, the Supreme Court was asked to take another look at that and decided that drop boxes actually are compliant with Wisconsin law. The law hasn't changed at all. This was just a clarification of what we'd all known for decades after a 2-year blip where drop boxes weren't allowed. And so now cities, villages, and towns around the state are free to use drop boxes for our elections here in 2024 again.
You know, I thought your point in reminding everybody that drop boxes had been used for years and years and years in Wisconsin, and it wasn't until Trump lost in 2020 that anybody questioned their use. How does that play out in the countryside? You know, there are a lot of municipal clerks in communities that their office is their home, right? And people can't access them, and clerks would just use drop boxes so people could return their ballots or envelopes and, you know, in an organized, secure way. Has Law Forward been in contact with clerks around the state in terms of, is this a good thing? Are they happy the law has changed?
I think for the most part, clerks are happy that the law has changed. And keep in mind that nothing requires any clerk to use a drop box if they don't want to. But as you suggest, while so much of the attention about drop boxes has gone to the big cities, to drop boxes in Milwaukee and Madison and Green Bay, the place where drop boxes make the biggest difference is in the rural areas, where the clerk is not a full-time job, and where the clerk's office might only be open a couple of hours a week. It becomes very difficult in those circumstances to return your ballot directly to the clerk during office hours. And so, in those communities where people live farther from the clerk's office and where the clerk's office is open less often, drop boxes make the biggest difference and are the biggest aid to voters. And that's one of the reasons that they had been used for so many years.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. I'm here with Jeff Mendel, of Law Forward, General Counsel full time, an organization that's been on the front of helping strengthen democracy in Wisconsin. We're talking about drop boxes and the Wisconsin Supreme Court's recent decision that drop boxes are legal again. My question, Jeff, is, how do you see this playing out now? I've seen press and responses on social media for by, you know, what I consider right wing, you know, MAGA folks, and I know that you're not a, it's not a partisan entity that you're in, but there have been just talk about go watch drop boxes. And how is that going to play out? Because we do have a component of Tigan that's still out there that said, you know, you got to be, the voter has to generally return the ballot unless they're disabled under federal law where you can have a representative. How do you see that playing out going forward?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch, and we need to make sure that voters are protected when they are exercising their rights. We are, as you say, seeing some discussions about people saying that they're going to watch the drop boxes. We saw just today new proposed legislation drop in the legislature to require that drop boxes be under 24-hour video surveillance and to require that when clerks collect ballots from drop boxes, they be accompanied by law enforcement. As you know, the commission put out in the wake of the decision last week some best practices from around the country to advise clerks on what cities and states around the country have learned about drop boxes. And those two recommendations were not among those best practices. And we saw in Arizona last election cycle some real threats where vigilantes were not just watching drop boxes, but threatening voters who tried to use them. We can't allow that to happen here in Wisconsin. Everyone wants drop boxes to be secure, to be used in the most responsible way. And we have no doubt that clerks will continue, as they traditionally have, making sure that drop boxes are secure. And I expect that most clerks will do everything in their power to follow the Elections Commission best practices materials if they're going to use drop boxes. But we need to make sure there's no intimidation.
And I think your point on that, the fact is before the 2020 elections and when clerks were using drop boxes, they made sure that they were secure and there were really no issues on it. And to me, it's always very, very ironic that something that has worked with folks and people have been voting, that it's only then after Trump lost that we had this backlash. More with Jeff Mandel. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. This is WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, Civic Media, moving Wisconsin forward. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show, Moving Wisconsin Forward. Jeff Mandel of Law Forward is our guest today. Law Forward is, frankly, the lead organization in the state covering the legal issues in democracy. There is a decision that just came down. Jeff's Markline. What is Markline decision and why should folks out there care?
This was one of the last decisions the Wisconsin Supreme Court issued this term on the same day that it decided that drop boxes were legal again. And it's actually a really big deal. It is about how the to what extent the legislature can hamstring the government in the state of Wisconsin. And I want to take you back to basic civics and Schoolhouse Rock, right? Remember the bill sitting on the steps of the Capitol, and how does it become a law? Well, it has to pass both houses of the legislature, and then it has to be signed by the governor, or if the governor vetoes it, the legislature can override that veto. This is also how we pass our budget in Wisconsin. And once the legislature has allocated tax dollars to make sure that the government in Wisconsin can do the things that the legislature thinks the government should be doing, if the governor signs that budget, then that's it. And the money goes out. It is the job of the executive branch of the governor to make sure that the law is faithfully executed. And the budget is part of that law. So here, What the Markline case was really about was the legislature having created a land conservation program in honor of two bipartisan former governors, right, a Republican and a Democrat, both of whom really valued protecting Wisconsin's natural resources. They created this program and they said to the Department of Natural Resources, here are a whole bunch of criteria, and you have to use these to decide which grants, which applications around the state for conservation funds get this money. And the Department of Natural Resources follows all of the instructions the legislature gives it. It's very, very detailed. But the legislature claimed that a small committee, just a handful of people on the Joint Finance Committee, still had the right to go back and second guess those decisions. And an anonymous hold by an individual legislature could stop any grant. And over the past few years, more and more of these anonymous holds were blocking these conservation funds from being used for the purpose they were intended for, and in exact following of the requirements the legislature set out. And what the Supreme Court said in the Markline decision is, you legislature, you can't do that. You can no longer take funds that you have already appropriated and hold them hostage, because that violates the governor's authority to faithfully execute the law. And this is a big deal for several reasons. The conservation program that we're talking about, the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, is not the only place that this has been happening in our state. It's happening all throughout different topics and areas of the law where the legislature is overextending its authority and interfering with the executive. And it's also a big deal, Mark, because this was not a decision that falls along partisan or ideological lines at the court. This was a 6-to-1 decision. And Justice Rebecca Bradley, who is probably the most conservative voice at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, wrote the majority opinion in favor of Governor Evers here.
So I just want to highlight a couple of things. Justice Rebecca Bradley has historically been very, very deferential to the legislature. And over again has been critical of the governor to overstep. So now she's writing for the majority. So how did that come about? How do we understand that?
Well, I think that fundamentally, what we understand is a couple of things. Number one, there is a difference between law and politics, and that's really important. Not every legal question falls along partisan or ideological lines. There are real legal principles about how the Constitution and our government and our democracy work, and it can't all be reduced to politics. Number two, I think we need to understand that what this shows is that, as you say, Justice Rebecca Bradley is generally very deferential to the legislature. Here, the legislature had overstepped so egregiously that even Justice Bradley said, whoa, 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 whoa,
Right.
you got to dial that way back.
Now, and I think, part of it is people don't understand joint finance. It is a very elite group of legislatures that decide major, major money decisions. And with our prior rigged system, we had essentially a lock by the Republicans and the far right Republicans on what they were going to do with money, no matter what. And here they were just stopping the directives of the DNR, the agency, and the executive branch, to the point that Justice Rebecca Bradley said, whoa, right?
I think that's exactly right. And keep in mind, as you say, the Joint Finance Committee is a very small group. It is, just a tiny fraction of the whole legislature. And any one member, there are 132 members of the legislature, 99 in the Assembly and 33 in the Senate. Any one member could anonymously hold up these funds, and the Joint Finance Committee would not allow them to be spent. That is not the way our government works. Our government works with transparency, with public deliberation, and with majority rule. So, if the legislature had objections to these funds being spent, nothing stopped them from holding a vote. And if a majority in each house wanted to stop the funds and the governor signed it, then that would be the law. But what they can't do is operate in secret and have a tiny majority, as small as one person, stop the operations of government after they have already approved those operations by law.
This case came down and said there are checks and balances on power. Briefly, we had a case from the U.S. Supreme Court on the immunity granted to the presidency. How was that decision? And in 30 seconds, how does that breach this check?
Well, it's the same basic idea, just sort of the opposite side of it. The concept of absolute immunity for anyone in our government, absolute immunity is incompatible with government of the people, by the people, for the people. It is fundamentally anti-democratic, and it doesn't allow checks and balances, which is the basis of our government.
Folks, Jeff Mandel of Law Forward, Law Forward Moving Wisconsin Forward, Protecting Democracy. Thank you so much, Jeff. Folks, check them out. Give. We need to protect our democracy. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show, WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM. Hello, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every week, moving Wisconsin forward, WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, here in the heart of the purple state of Wisconsin, in the Kiki County of Waukesha. I'm so happy to have Matt Moreno back. Matt is the what's the official position?
The chair.
The chair of the Waukesha County Democratic Party. So happy to have you back,
Matt. It's great to be back. I appreciate the invite.
So, you know, we got elections coming up, primaries August 13th, the big election on November 5th that's going to set the stage for what democracy is going to look like in the country and the world, frankly. How do you sit here and see the situation on the ground in Waukesha County? We're on the eve of the RNC convention in Milwaukee. And so what do you see the issues ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who tells you that they feel comfortable and confident right now are lying to you, or they're not plugged in very well. Everyone listening right now should be a little concerned. And that concern should be fuel and motivation for how we spend the next 3 months of our lives. Because like you said, the next 3 months are going to dictate the next 20 years of the U.S. government and world affairs. Things are tough. You know, we're not winning. And I wouldn't say we're losing right now, but we're definitely not winning. And that should be the motivation we all take to start taking the actions we need to take to not repeat what we felt in 2016. So that's where we see the landscape right now at the presidential level. At the Senate level, I would rather be Tammy Baldwin today than Eric Hovde. I have a hard enough time remembering his name, just like voters do. You know, he has proven time and time again how out of touch he is, and I think Tammy's in a great spot. The fundraising numbers that were released a few days ago showed that Hovde's only way of raising money is by giving it to himself, now up to $13 million. Not very Wisconsin values of California banker Eric Hovde.
You know, let's just touch on that. I think, you know, to me, as, you know, look, I've been a lawyer a long, long time. But before that, I was a steel worker for eight years. And I do remember looking at, you know, day-to-day prices, and we all do. Mm-hmm. Okay, but Hovde brings a new level of money and power to the Senate position. Unbelievable. You know, I mean, we did have Herb Kohl, right? Mm-hmm. He did have money, but Herb was a public servant and gave over and over and over and gave back to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, I know Eric Hovde has tried to classify himself as a Herb Kohl type, and that's frankly disparaging on Herb Kohl.
I agree.
Like you said, Eric Hovde, if he got elected today, he would be one of the richest people to ever serve in the United States Senate in the history of our country. And he got it by, you know, shady business practices. The longer he's in this race, the more we're learning about him, and it's not good. He owns a bank in California where he has his secondary residence, since he technically lives in Wisconsin. And we've seen the shady stuff happening in California. And then the more time we spend, we learn that his investments overseas are coming at the expense of human lives and at the expense of ethics and morality, and oftentimes at the expense of American taxpayers, where some of the companies he's heavily invested in are defrauding the United States government and the United States taxpayers. So Hovde has spent his entire life looking out for himself, and I think that's why he's running for the U.S. Senate. If you look at the proposals he's putting forward, if you look at Project 2025 that he is clearly in favor of, it would cut his taxes dramatically. So the $13 million that he invests into his race is a small down payment for a massive tax cut that will save him and his allies hundreds of millions of dollars over the next several years.
I'm glad you brought that up. People forget, you know, there was a time when Republicans in the United States, and Eisenhower, 1959, a hero of World War II, but we forget he taxed the wealthy almost at 90%. Mm-hmm. And the wealthy in the United States were still the richest people on the whole planet. But we developed a middle class because we had the money. And what Trump did, and now they want to do again.
Even more extreme this time. It's even worse this time.
It's this just deciding to walk away from people to keep everything. The greed is just, I mean, when you said there are concerns, I think this has got to be one of the concerns you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And we look at, you know, Elon Musk a couple days ago announced that he was going to be funneling $45 million per month. Into a super PAC to support Donald Trump and Project 2025. Why is he and almost half of the billionaires of this country supporting Donald Trump?
Because they never want to pay a penny of taxes.
Yep. You know, it's a big question you have to ask. Why would somebody donate $150 million to elect one person? Well, that person's going to return that money and then some.
Oh, a lot more than that.
Absolutely. Elon Musk will make so much more money under Donald Trump, not because Trump runs a better economy, but because Trump will cut regulation and cut taxes to make the billionaires even richer at the cost of every working man and woman of this country.
And frankly, at the expense of humanity worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, yes, if you're out there listening, 2024 and the election is one to be concerned about. So we've talked about the tax giveaway for the super, super rich. But you brought up 2025.
Yeah.
People are at one level are just starting to talk about it. What is 2025?
Project 2025 is 900 pages of the most radical policy proposal you will ever read. It sounds un-American in a lot of ways. It's massive tax cuts for the wealthy. It is the complete unregulation of big banks and the biggest businesses in this country. It is deportation of over 10 million people who live in America, people of all different statuses who happen to be here illegally, so in one way, shape, or form.
Including the kids that were brought here at 2 and 3. Yep.
Including the Dreamers.
Right, and grew up as Americans.
Yep.
You know, deport them back to who knows where.
Yeah, we're talking, you know, paramedics, firefighters, EMTs, teachers, public servants.
But not only
friends and neighbors.
What? And this is Wisconsin, and this is Waukesha. There's a lot of farms around here, right?
A lot of farmers, yeah.
They're all milking cows with immigrants.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, it would be a cataclysmic change in the way we run this country. I mean, if you think prices are expensive today, imagine if we were paying, you know, $15 an hour to people to milk the cows or pick your vegetables or run the farms. You know, a lot of our economy is on the back of undocumented immigrants. And if we try to send in the military to our cities and our communities to deport them, that's a massive change in everything we've stood for as a country since we were founded. But at its heart, Project 2025 just absolutely changes this into what I think is a dream of the Christian right, because it does penalize people who do not live a Christian morality according to Christian nationalism. So our LGBT friends and neighbors, our friends and neighbors who had abortions, people seeking IVF, people who dare have sex for pleasure and not just reproducing. Every single thing that the average person does that does not align with a Christian value, or at least a radical right version of Christian values, is threatened by what they've put into Project 2025.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think there is this notion that somehow that is Christian is really problematic, right? Because if you're out there historically, and if Jesus was your model, you would not have 2025 on your agenda, right? I mean, you would not be talking this. And so this idea that somehow it's actually Christian, when it's really just about white power, that's what it is.
It's, you know, it's a radical interpretation of Christianity.
It lines up with the original Christian defense of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as if that was justified.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the what other concerns do you see that, you know, because you said at the outset, we have concerns.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've talked about wealth. We've talked about 2025 and Trump's takeover.
Yeah, I think our judiciary is becoming a bigger concern for a lot of average people. We've seen Trump convicted of 34 felonies. We've seen a judge that was attacked ruthlessly by Donald Trump. And then we saw a judge that Trump appointed dismiss federal charges against him that for mishandling classified U.S. secrets.
Let me just touch on that.
Yeah.
And it surprised me that there wasn't more discussion of the fact of when that decision was released in the mainstream press. It was as if a decision just came down. That was a gift from a Trump-appointed judge, mm-hmm. a gift politically on the opening day of the RNC.
Yeah.
First Absolutely. Of all, it's the first of any decision by a federal judge to say the delegation to who could make the charges was somehow unconstitutional.
Absolutely. Right? And furthermore, if you look at Trump's, one of his closest allies, and Matt Gaetz, a congressman from Florida where this judge made the decision, he already called her the next Supreme Court justice. So it sure looks like she dismissed these charges in an effort to get some sort of payback during a Trump presidency in a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. And that type of behavior has no place in the government, and that type of corruption should be investigated by the highest law of the land.
Yeah, and setting aside whether they're, at a minimum, if you're a federal judge and you do not release a decision as a gift, mm-hmm. to the person that appointed you on the opening day of that person's RNC.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just stunning. Yep. But the fact that the press didn't talk about it that way is also stunning to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do have a lot of sympathy for the press right now. It feels like we're running a billion miles an hour, where Trump was convicted of 34 felonies just a few weeks ago. And yet we are completely overshadowed by new things happening every day.
And without a doubt. So the other, let's say, you know, if there was another concern that you're focused on, what is it that Dems in Waukesha County are looking at?
Look, I mean, the biggest thing we're looking at from an issues perspective is going to be women's rights. women's rights and gun rights are the two biggest things that we're talking about on the ground, because it's the biggest thing we're hearing from voters consistently for the last couple of years. And I think the assassination attempt goes to highlight the problems we have with guns in this country. And it highlights the fear that a lot of families in Waukesha County feel every day as they send their young kids to school, not knowing if today could be a day that a mass shooting hits Waukesha. As well as the families raising young daughters in worlds where they have less rights than their mothers and grandmothers had. These are things we're hearing from young families, from grandparents every day, as they're raising kids in a world where we are rolling back rights for the first time in U.S. history.
This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We're here with Matt Moreno on the ground in the middle of Waukesha County. Matt's the chair of the Democratic Party in this purple county, trying to make it bluer than redder. The road forward is going to be bumpy, but we're going to be back to talk about the hopeful side of things, because we do have to go forward. Hello, this is Mark Thompson. I am an attorney. I am the proud host of the Paul Revere Show, your Paul Revere Show, focused on moving Wisconsin forward and making sure that there is a democracy in the future for each of us, our kids, grandkids. My guest is Matt Moreno. He is the chair of the Democratic Party of Waukesha, Waukesha County Democratic Party, who has the responsibility to be out here at the street level in this crucial, crucial county of Waukesha in the middle of, you know, Wisconsin, which is going to be, again, ground zero on November 5, 2024. Our votes could pick the next president of the United States and determine the future, not only just short-term, folks, but long-term, a decade, two decades, quarter century, half a century of what it means to be an American and what does democracy look like here. We talked about women and youth and the issues that are really facing them. And the idea of women's rights, our state Supreme Court just accepted a couple of cases, going to decide whether there's going to be a right under the Wisconsin Constitution for women to choose, to have reproductive rights. So that's a hopeful sign in light of the, you know, the national walk on, you know, Trump's courts.
Absolutely. And I think it can't be overstated, no matter how many times you talk about it, that elections have consequences. Wisconsinites showed up time and time again the last several springs to give power back to a liberal-minded majority on the Supreme Court. And now we have a Supreme Court who is open-minded enough to take this case. And from early accounts, looks like we will hopefully have some success in the case. But it's, again, because people showed up and let their voices make the difference. And it's the same thing we need to do in November, is show up and let our voices make that difference.
Right, right. And, you know, this notion of that your vote really doesn't matter. Folks, when you look at what happened when people put Trump in 2016, he said he was going to pick justices that would get rid of Roe and a woman's right to choose. And he delivered. And we're talking that there is a state court that is going to at least protect women in the state of Wisconsin. How are you out there? How is the Coney Party in Waukesha mobilizing women and young people? And frankly, look, everybody, you know, it's a women's right is not just a woman's right. It's a humanity right. I mean, men should be fighting for this.
Yeah.
How's it going on the street?
It's been energetic. It's been exciting. Every day we're getting tons of new outreaches of folks who want to get involved, folks who want to make a difference. We're talking to thousands of voters every week with the goal of hitting 250,000 voter contacts before November in just Waukesha County. Because we know that the election comes down to Wisconsin, and Wisconsin comes down to crucial Waukesha County, not only to deliver the White House for Joe Biden, as well as to deliver the Senate and send Tammy Baldwin back to Washington. And we have some key assembly races, state Senate races, and there's House races. So Waukesha County plays in every single aspect of Wisconsin politics. So we're everywhere. You know, right now, as we're talking Saturday morning, we are at the Waukesha County Fair. I'm going to be leaving here and going directly to my shift at the Waukesha County Fair so that we can talk to voters out where they're at, engaging with them to talk about the issues that are affecting them. It's exactly what we need to be doing. No voters off limits, no matter how many times you voted for Republicans in the past. We have a message that we want to share with you, and we want to hear what you need for a vision of the country to move forward with. Because no matter when we win in November, we're going to represent all of the country. And every American, regardless of how you vote, has Joe Biden as your president. And we want to make sure that we are governing in a way that represents everybody, regardless of who they did cast their ballot for. Unlike the opposition, who has clearly said that he does not care. If you don't support him, he doesn't care about you. He told Nikki Haley voters, Donald Trump did, that he didn't want their support after he won the nomination because he doesn't care. He is only out for himself, for revenge, and for grievance.
So as the party structure works in Waukesha County, are you seeing undecided, are you seeing people in the middle concerned about the 2025 and Trump's move to the right? What are people saying?
We launched our first digital ad on Project 2025 about a week and a half ago, and within 24 hours, it was the most engaged with post on our social media of the last 18 months. As people learn about Project 2025, they are becoming hyper-concerned because it takes away this idea that a Trump presidency could be normal, because we feel like Trump was normal because COVID was such a shock to our system that we kind of ignore the few years before it. And I also think that a lot of people, and we see this on the ground constantly, is they don't fully yet accept that Donald Trump is back. It's kind of like a bad dream that they thought they woke up from, but realized that it wasn't a dream at all. The Trump presidency that keeps on giving. And as he's here in Milwaukee, bringing his special blend of chaos and divisiveness and all of that, we heard over the weekend that this was them at their best. After the assassination attempt, they pledged to be a party of unification. So them this past week at their best delivered nothing but attacks and divisiveness. That is going to get multiplied by 10. When Donald Trump would be back in the White House. So people are seeing what he talked about. They're seeing his behavior now that it's becoming real that he is back once again. The threat is at our doorstep, and it's becoming very easy for us to talk to folks about the reality of what could happen under Donald Trump. And with his doubling down on MAGA-style politics and J.D. Vance, we are seeing more Republicans who are reaching out to us, asking for ways to be involved because J.D. Vance is not what they were hoping for.
Folks, if you care about democracy, if you care about your future, your kids' future, your grandchildren's future, register to vote. Plan on voting August 13th. Don't miss voting November 5th, 2024. Make sure you're there voting blue down the line, folks. If we're going to have a chance, that's a must. You got to always move forward. attorney Mark Thompson, your Paul Revere show. It's a great time to have a Paul Revere show, man. It's everything's on the line.